Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This edition of Where to Go is sponsored by WH Smith. Get 25% off our new book, Ride Cycle the World, now in store at whsmith.co.uk or via the link in our episode bio. Hello and welcome to Where to Go, where we escape to a different part of the world every 2 weeks. I'm James Atkinson, brand manager at DK Eyewitness, and in this week's special episode, I'm going to take you to a few places by bicycle, actually. So today we are celebrating the publication of our new book, Ride, Cycle the World, and we'll be talking to some of the writers behind the book, as well as some of the editors behind the book too, about their favourite cycling journeys. The book itself features over 100 incredible cycling journeys from across the globe. There are on and off road routes for all types of cyclists, whether you're setting out on your first cycle tour or you're a seasoned pro at it. The routes will guide you up mountain passes in Italy's Dolomites to tackling Bolivia's infamous Death Road in South America, or you could choose to cycle the famous Cape to Cairo route across Africa or go island hopping in Japan. So if all that sounds fun, then, you know, listen on and you will find some wonderful cycling inspiration from the book. So we'll firstly speak to Rachel Laidler and Elspeth Badis, the editors of Ride Cycle the World, to hear about how the book came about, how they found out about some of the cyclists and routes featured inside the book, and some of their own personal favourite rides. So hi, Elspeth. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
Welcome. It's great to have you guys back on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
For some eagle-eared listeners, you may remember Elspeth and Rachel joined us for our sort of 2021 special, so it's great to have you guys back. And I guess we'll start by talking about Ride, Cycle the World and just asking the question about how the book came about.
Yeah, I'll kick off. So it started, we had a sort of a new ideas week at work, really, where we had new project ideas to sort of work up. And one of the ideas we wanted to do was a cycling book. So there's quite a few of us on the team who cycle, so we were sort of all tasked with coming up with a concept for a book on cycling. So we had a week where we kind of brainstormed ideas. And yeah, our experiences of cycling and holidays of cycling and what we would want to see in a book. Yeah, I'll let Rachel say a bit more.
Yeah, and I think from there we really went on to thinking about who the audience of the book would be. And like Elspeth said, because all of us who were working on the book were all cyclists, we kind of had an idea about what we'd want from it. But one of the things was trying to work out what our audience's motivations would be for cycling. Because it's not necessarily, I think sometimes there's a belief that there's like a single type of cyclist out there, lycra clad sort.
the mammal.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Using that word, but yeah.
I'm sorry by anyone who's insulted by that. Apparently that stands for middle-aged man in lycra,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So we didn't want it to just be to be like a focus on a single sort of cyclist. We wanted it to be, because there's so many different motivations, I think, for why you go cycling. Sometimes it can be for the physical challenge of it. Sometimes it's for just getting out and seeing beautiful scenery. And then for other people, it's a way to like take in different sights and culture along the way. So, you know, we realized, I think, from looking at the different motivations, that we wanted the audience for the book to be quite broad. And to really champion the fact that cycling is for everyone, I suppose.
Yeah, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea in that week where you kind of brainstormed the book and kind of came up with it was before lockdown, really. And, you know, when we were back in the office, which feels like a lifetime ago. But obviously cycling has kind of kicked into a different realm since then, really. And obviously a lot of people have started cycling a hell of a lot more during lockdown. And I think it really kind of shows in the book that there are kind of rides for, you know, if you're doing your kind of, if you've started cycling in lockdown, you want to kind of take it to the next level, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And I mean, I know that I started off commuting into work. That's how I first started cycling. And that kind of got me into it. And I definitely wasn't, I mean, there's some rides in the book that are absolutely, they're just like massive multi-day kind of epic adventures.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm still like working my way towards those ones. But then you've got like day-long cycles or ones that are a couple of days and that aren't necessarily like too challenging. So I think we've definitely got something in there for everybody, whatever your like skill level is or your ability level is with cycling.
Yeah, and the book's kind of full of things like elevation profiles and sort of tips and hints as well, right? To try and make it a little bit easier for people or to get them to understand the skill level involved.
Yeah, I mean, that was something we were very conscious of, is we wanted to provide really useful, practical information, but we didn't want to be prescriptive, because obviously everyone's got different needs and cycles at different levels. So we don't want to say this is easy, this is hard. We just wanted to give people the facts and then they can make their own mind up about whether they want to do it. So we've made sure that we've got like the distance and then we've got the total elevation for every ride and a little elevation profile with a little graph showing all of the climbs, which can be quite scary on some of the rides. And we've got maps for all of them as well. So you can actually see the route and highlights that you'll pass on the way.
Yeah, because the maps are a big part of it and they look beautiful in the book as well. That's big props to Casper who developed some of those. But yeah, I mean, some of the elevation profiles, you do see some scary highs, don't you? I think there's one route in Scotland, I think, where there's just like, it's flat, and then suddenly it's almost like a right angle going upwards, right?
Yeah, I think that might be the Bialik Na Bar, which I think I've been roped into doing now. that's going to be fun. But yeah, that starts off as like, from my understanding of it, like a winding ascent, and then all of a sudden, just to like, you know, make you really hurt at the end, it's got I think it's got switchbacks that go up to like 20%. So yeah, it looks quite tough, but the elevation profile for that definitely lets you know what you're in for.
And obviously with a book like this, like, you kind of I mean, you guys have done a brilliant job of pulling together sort of a team of about over 20 different kind of cyclists and writers and you know, with various different kind of experiences, various places in the world that they live as well. How did you go about finding those cyclists, and how did you almost narrow it down to like some of the best writers?
I suppose there was a lot of research involved initially, but we were actually amazed. So we looked at a lot of things like cycling magazines or articles in newspapers and books and like blogs as well, cycling blogs. And yeah, we found actually a whole kind of range of people that way. And it was amazing to see the variety of experience that a lot of people had. And it was interesting as well, because it wasn't just like cycling writers and journalists, although we've got quite a few of those folk who've contributed to the book, but it was also people who are like endurance athletes, cycling athletes. They've done like cycle racing, quite a few bloggers as well. And so, yeah, it was just a whole mix of people that ended up coming to write for us. I think we've got something like, is it 40 authors? Over 40 authors in total? Yeah.
It's over 40? Yeah. I was totally wrong with 20.
Or did you say 20? Sorry, I'm sneakily correcting you there. I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I deserve to be corrected. That's I stand corrected. But 40 authors over 100 routes as well. And as you say, the routes really range from different like kind of levels of expertise and stuff. And I guess you're cyclists that you've got different, like probably road specialists, people who are more kind of off-road, different sort of bike specialists as well.
So Lee Craigie, who is actually a professional mountain bike racer. I think she represented Team GB in the World Championships and then Scotland in the Commonwealth Games. So I think she's into a lot of like off-road kind of mountain biking. And we also had Cass Gilbert, who he's done a lot of backcountry backpacking stuff. And he actually helped set up one of the routes in the book, the Trans-Ecuador mountain bike route, I think it's called. And that basically like traces a line down the volcanic spine of Ecuador. So we've got a whole variety of people and folk who are road cyclists as well. It was a good collection.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, I mean, one thing that we were really keen on as well is that we wanted all of the writers to have actually ridden the rides that they're writing about in the book. So that was a big thing we were looking for, is people who'd actually done the routes. So they had the first hand experience to describe the experience.
Were you asking for proof? Demand like a photograph or some kind of memento from the route?
Well, the good thing was that quite a lot of them had GPX routes, which is basically like a map that you can download and put onto your phone or your cycling computer. And that's one of the things that we've actually got linked to the book on our website on dk.com is a list of those. So we've got one of the GPX routes for every single ride, so that you're not just reading about, you get to read about the ride in the book itself, and then you can go and download the route, and that gives you like a helping hand to navigate while you're on the road.
Brilliant. And that sort of, is your, the book is almost with you every step of the way in that regard then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's really cool. And could you guys sort of tell us a little bit about some of your favourite rides from the book personally? Are you actually planning to take any? Start with you, Elspeth.
Yes, well, I talked about this in my last podcast appearance. I do have plans to do the Lorne Las Cymru in Wales, which is basically cycling from Cardiff to Holyhead. Was thinking about doing it this year, but I'm not sure. I think I need a bit more training because it's quite hilly. So need a bit of practice, build up the legs and then go for that one, I think.
Yeah, that's a really, really impressive one. I think it kind of covers like the whole sort of, is it the sort of coast of Wales?
It kind of goes around. It goes up through the middle and then kind of, I think sort of halfway or towards the top, like then you sort of peel over to the coast and the last bit's all the way along the coast. It looks beautiful from the pictures that I've seen.
Cool. I'm quite surprised you haven't been tempted to do any sort of safari ones as well, because there's a couple of safari routes in there, Elspeth.
Yes.
Elspeth is our kind of resident safari expert in DK.
Yeah, there's a mountain bike safari one in Botswana, which I have to say is quite high on my wish list. It just sounds so different. And a bit scary, because I mean, the thought of kind of cycling next to a lion sounds just like total madness. But apparently, because you have to go out in a group, and so when you're all cycling along in a big group, you look like a sort of much bigger predator. So the lion's scared of you, so it doesn't attempt to eat you.
Fingers crossed. No, that's quite an incredible route, and yeah, I think probably does take a tiny bit of bravery, slightly. And how about you, Rachel? Because you've recently moved to Scotland as well, so you were talking about potentially doing, I think that's the Applecross Peninsula.
Yeah, loop, the Applecross Peninsula loop, which is that's the Bealach na Barba climb is part of that. So that's definitely yeah, that's definitely on my list. And then I think the other one that I want to do, which is, it's actually terrible, I haven't done it yet, is the Sea to Sea. So that's the one that goes from Whitehaven on the, let me get the coasts right, west coast, yes, that's right, to then Tynemouth, I think it is, on the east coast, so in the north of England, because I'm from the North Pennines originally, and the route actually passes through the village that I grew up in. So it's pretty terrible that I haven't done it yet, but it just looks absolutely beautiful. So you get to go through the like rolling scenery of the Lake District, and you get to see all the mountains and like the sheep speckled fields and things like that. And then you go actually up onto the over the moorland, which is like quite bleak but beautiful at the same time. So you get to travel through like a variety of different landscapes, and it just sounds spectacular. So that one for close to home. But then I think as well, probably the Pacific Coast route in the US.
Yes, yeah.
Which is, I mean,
that's big. That's
yeah,
big.
Yeah, Epic Rides. Talk about training. I'll need a lot of training for that. so that's like, I think it's over 2,500 kilometers, and it runs from Washington through Washington State through Oregon, and then down into California. But you've got like stunning coastal scenery all the way down. So that's definitely one for the bucket list. But yeah, I'll need a bit of training and preparation for that, I think.
Yeah, that's really, really serious. There's so many different cities, kind of valleys and stuff that you go through. Some really sort of like different style roads as well, by the looks of it.
I think that the terrain in terms of like the amount of like ascent you're doing and stuff varies quite a bit. I think sometimes you're just winding along by the coast, and then other times there's quite like sharp and steep, like challenging climbs there as well. But you get to go along Big Sur, which I think is listed as one of the most scenic drives in the world, and obviously makes for quite a scenic cycle as well. But yeah,
that's right towards the end as well, isn't it?
I think that's quite close towards the end. So hopefully you'll get to cruise along there, even if your legs are feeling a little bit tired.
I think it's one of my best bits of the book. Correct me if this is wrong, because I've lost my copy because I had to give it to a courier. I had to give it to someone to do a photo shoot, and I haven't got it back yet. At the end of the Pacific Coast route, there's like a little, if you want to take this further, and it's like, okay, this is 2,500 kilometers, and you can take it further by going into Mexico and stuff. But surely that's a brave person.
I think that you can. I think you can go further south. I think you can actually join up with one of the other routes that like runs through. Well, there's a route that goes all the way down through South America, but you can also start in British Columbia as well, I think, and then go from Vancouver down to Seattle. Just if you want a little bit of extra kilometers.
That's so cool. And so there's 100 rides in total. I think it's over six different continents. Were there any in particular that kind of massively surprised you? Because there's some I had no idea about, and some places I had no idea about. I didn't know that, you know, for instance, there's a cycle through the Tian Shan Mountains in Kyrgyzstan. That sounds unbelievable. That is a totally different way to see something.
I think maybe the one that I think shocked the whole team the most was the Tour d'Afrique, which goes from Cairo in Egypt down to Cape Town in South Africa. And that's talk about long rides. That's like over 11,000 kilometers or something like that. And you're going through multiple different countries. I mean, the variety of like experience that you get along the way would be absolutely amazing.
But
I think that's supposed to take about 3 months to do. So a lot of days in the saddle. That was definitely one that we were all like, wow, that is the most epic trip.
it's quite unbelievable. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us, telling us a bit about the book, and we look forward to taking some of those routes, or hearing about you taking some of those routes as well.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted.
Cool. Covering 100 incredible routes, Ride, the new book from DK Eyewitness, is the perfect way to start cycling the world, whether you're an experienced road cyclist or have just started cycling in lockdown. Awe-inspiring images and compelling descriptions of each ride will have you ready to jump in the saddle, while handy maps, elevation profiles and practical information will help you plan the nitty-gritty of your trip. Get 25% off when you get the book at WH Smith. Simply head to whsmith.co.uk or find the book via the link in our episode bio. So after hearing from our editors, we'll now speak to two of the writers behind the book. So we're speaking to Jenny Tuff and Tom Owen, both kind of very experienced cycling writers. And we're going to basically find out a bit more about some of their favourite routes from the book, as well as some of their sort of advice for cyclists. First up is Jenny Tuff, a cyclist, adventurer, storyteller and mountain lover. And yes, that is her real name, as she boldly claims on her website. Jenny's adventuring is not just by bike either. She's fast-packed across mountain ranges across the world, and she recently edited the book Tough Women, Adventure Stories, Stories of Grit, featuring adventure stories from women all over the world. So, welcome Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for joining us to discuss Ride, Cycle the World. So, Jenny, you wrote quite a few epic journeys in Ride, Cycle the World. So you did the Atlas Mountains and the Tian Shan Mountains and the Dinaric Alps as well. So kind of a bit of an adventurous theme going on. But do you have a particular favorite? I know that must be a bit like picking between your children, right?
I was literally just going to say, like, ask me to pick a favorite child. Yeah, those rides all have really fond places in my heart. And also contributed Vancouver Island, which is the one that stands out to me right now, because that was my only real pandemic ride that I got to do, because my folks are on Vancouver Island and that's where I spent last summer. So I finally got to break out, and that was the only ride that I could really do. You know, you can travel anywhere else. And then I just had this amazing from the front door adventure. And after so many years of doing, as you say, like these epic ones, you know, going around to Central Asia and Africa, and to actually do a ride from my front door and find all that stoke that I've traveled the world to find was really rewarding. It was a really amazing experience.
That's really cool. Could you tell us a little bit about what you found and a bit of a preview to the route?
Yeah. So, I mean, Vancouver Island, it's, if you look at a map of Canada, it looks really small, but then if you maybe scale over the size of Britain, it's actually really big. it's not a very populated island. Once you get out of, so the capital city is on the very southern tip, Victoria. Once you get out of that capital city, things get quiet really quickly. I think I was 22 or 23 minutes into the ride when I saw my first black bear. So you're like, yeah, I mean, it's proper Canada. You're just thrust into the wilderness immediately. And it was really funny because I'd just come back from Britain, and I'd lived in Scotland for 9 years, and you just get really nonchalant because there's no wildlife in Britain. And I remember just like, yeah, I'm just a few minutes into this ride, and then just suddenly there's a bear on the trail, and I'm like, oh, right. You're home now. This is what it's like. You need to have your wits about you. That's is the amazing. Bear spray actually somewhere accessible? Can I remember how to survive in Canada?
How did you avoid the bear? Do you have any tips about avoiding bears on a bike?
Yeah, so black bears are actually, they're the worst. They won't even wait around for photographs. They're so shy. So black bears will run away, assuming they don't have cubs. I mean, if you see a black bear with cubs, you've got problems, basically.
Yeah.
But if it's just a black bear that's just eating in the bushes, they don't want to see you any more than you want to see them. So make some noise. Like, I usually just change gears. My bike's usually loud enough that I can just kind of like make some mechanical noises, and they'll sprint off into the bushes. But yeah, I mean, you can't even get a photo of them. They don't want to hang out.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. And actually, like a bit further into you were saying about kind of getting into wild Canada, what kind of scenery did you get there?
You get a really good mix of the best of the West Coast. So I think when people picture the West Coast of Canada, they picture just intense greenery, you know, these really native forests that are so dense and so vast. I mean, it's hard to appreciate the scale of wilderness of a place like Canada, when, especially when you compare it to Europe. I mean,
yeah,
it's the second biggest country in the world and has a really small population. So you do get that intensity of being in a really vast wilderness. And really beautiful wildlife. You know, the bears are awesome, but there's also, if you look skywards, you know, I saw bald eagles all the time and they make wow. the most beautiful calls. I love listening to them. A few times I was down by the coast and I saw seals, I saw otters. I tried really hard to see orcas because you will see them every now and then, but I didn't get them on this ride, but I have plenty of times in the past. You know, you're just spoiled when it comes to the wilderness that you're getting. So it's, yeah, I mean, it was, just especially that I did this during the pandemic, so everyone's stress levels are a little bit higher and you've been indoors way more than you're used to.
Yep, yep.
You know, that concept of forest bathing, I just really realized I was having that in a really intense level. Like, I just felt so good and so calm to be surrounded by that much nature and just in endless quantities.
Because how sort of long into the pandemic was this? Was it sort of towards the beginning, or had you had a couple of months inside?
Yeah, this was, I guess, during our respite. So this was, I must have done last ride in June.
Mm.
So we'd been through a full lockdown. We'd come out of lockdown and had this summer where, remember, we just thought things were going to be better.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, summer's here and we're fine. This
remember little... it very, very, very well.
Yeah, exactly. So it was my break out of jail. It was like, lockdown's out and I've got a bike and I'm going.
I mean, what a place to break out into as well. That's that's quite fascinating. And were the kind of routes like quite easy to follow? Was the cycling sort of, what kind of difficulty level was it?
Yeah, so that's the unique thing about most of Canada, but especially the island, is that there just aren't that many roads or routes that you can take. So you pretty much can't mess this up. Like, if you get lost on the island, I think you've just won a prize. Like, you know, we have one main highway that goes north to south. And then off of that, we have, they're called FSRs, fire service roads. So they're all gravel roads that some of them are in commission by the forestry service and a lot of them are not. So then you get a lot more potholes in those ones. But yeah, they're gravel and they're not going anywhere. They go into the forest and they come back out. And I mean, if you kind of picture Norway, like really fjordy, so there's actually so much coastline that traveling on land is quite limited. So yeah, there's just not a lot of route options. You can pretty much take the road version or the off-road version. The off-road version, you can definitely get some very challenging gravel segments with some fantastic climbs. And that's the stuff that I love the most in cycling. And the road is really straightforward. You'll see a lot of lycra clad roadies just out sprinting across that highway because it's, you know, it's a really well maintained, straight, relatively flat road. So you've got the options.
Fantastic. It sounds amazing. Well, and just incredible to have that on your front door as well. And as we sort of mentioned, like, as well as you do a lot of kind of adventure cycling and seem to have a crazy fondness for going uphill as well. But do you have any kind of for people who are readers of Ride and like kind of might be setting out on their first kind of bikepacking trip? I hate that word, but I can't think of a better one. Do you have any kind of advice or tips?
Yeah, I think my first thing would be pack less than you feel comfortable with. So maybe put out all the stuff that you're going to bring and then remove at least a couple of items. That's something that, I mean, I've been doing this for more than a decade and it still gives me anxiety. You get used to all your stuff and your comfort and then you pack and you're like, well, I'll definitely want this. I'll definitely want that.
Yep.
A few hours down the trail, especially when you're hauling all that heavy stuff up the hill, you just think like, I don't care about that sweater. Like, what is that sweater to me? I'll throw it in the garbage right now. So just don't bring that sweater. That's all I'm saying.
Be minimalist. Kind of take everything.
Be minimalist. Yeah, exactly. I mean, within the realms of safety, please bring a waterproof and sunscreen and a phone charger and all that kind of stuff.
Like, food, let me get that PSA as well. I'm guessing. Yeah, you've kind of written, as well as cycling, you also do some really, really epic kind of like hiking, running, everything else. And you've written a book, sort of edited a book about it called Tough Women. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was, I think, the project I'm most proud of in my career so far. It basically came about that, you know, I work in the outdoor industry as a freelancer, and mm-hmm. I get to give talks and go on podcasts, and I always get asked the question, why are there not more women in adventure? Mm-hmm. And it always stumps me because, like, I've been in the adventure industry for so long, and most of the people I work with are women. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I think it's at the top level media, you know, I would blame television the most, but also bookshops, that you just see one demographic representing outdoor sports and adventure. Mm-hmm. And that means we're also only getting one narrative, one type of outdoor enthusiast. So I came up with the idea of a book, but I knew all these amazing women who are full-time in the outdoor industry. Some of them are athletes, some of them are photographers, mm-hmm. creatives, businesswomen, you know, lots of different types of women who explore the outdoors in different ways and do it as a career. And so I put together this anthology. So every woman's written a short story about her experiences in the outdoors. And it's not a rant. It's not an essay. It's just a collection of really cool adventure stories that all happen to be written by women.
That sounds so cool. Well, I'm looking very much forward to reading that.
And, awesome.
I think it's available in bookstores as well. But before we leave you, I just wanted to quickly ask, you mentioned about living in Scotland as well. And do you have any particular favourite cycle rides in Scotland that you've taken?
The Cairngorm Loop is always a goodie. I think if I have a weekend that I can get out, Cairngorm Loop is just a bit more accessible because you can obviously take the train to somewhere like Abbeymore.
Yep.
And then you're just instantly out into the Cairngorms. You can bothy it if you... I mean, I think the bothies are still shut, but, you know, you can bothy it if you want to. You can wild camp in Scotland anywhere. The paths are amazing. Oh, yeah, Cairngorms. Yeah, go do it if you haven't done it.
Sounds great. Sounds amazing. Well, thank you very much, Jenny. Thanks for joining us. And
thanks for having me.
No, it's super early over there, so much, much appreciated.
I've got coffee.
Very good.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now we'll speak to Tom Owen, who is a cyclist who caught the bug when commuting on his bicycle in London. Since then, he's been spermonic hunting, and we'll get to what that means in a bit, but he did it in North Macedonia, and has also been racing in Sierra Leone amongst traveling the world, basically, on his bike. Tom writes about cycling for platforms such as the Fausto Agency, The Telegraph, and Vice. So without further ado, hi, Tom. Welcome, Tom.
Hello, James.
Hey, nice, lovely to have you join us today. All the way from sunny Cambridge.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm really, really excited to talk to you about the ride from Ride.
Yeah. So we did ask you to kind of pick out one of your favourite rides from the book, and you've actually wrote a couple that have been featured. So I'm really, really interested to know which one you've kind of narrowed it down to.
Yeah. So the one that I think I'm the most proud of, I would say, was the Spermenic themed yes. ride around Macedonia, North Macedonia, you should call it yep. by its proper name. So a Spermenic, for people that don't know, it means monument. And they were a collection of kind of brutalist concrete sculptures that were put up in the period when North Macedonia was part of Yugoslavia. So these Spomenics are actually not just in North Macedonia, they're all over former Yugoslavia, and they're really quite amazing things to look at. And we thought that Macedonia seemed like a kind of manageable country to do a tour of, or indeed a lap. So the name that we gave the trip among ourselves was Lapadonia. And it's about 700 kilometers of riding, and you begin and finish in the capital city of Skopje. And I think it comprises about 15 of these Spermenics, and they're all completely different from one another. They have different architects, they have different provenance. They're almost all war memorials, kind of commemorating something that happened in the Second World War. But it was just the most eye-opening trip. To be within Europe, and you know the southern border is Greece, and then Bulgaria to the east, but it felt like being kind of otherworldly. It felt like kind of going back in time, but really just an amazing journey.
Yeah, because it is, some of that journey is kind of in the wilderness, right? And there's like there's lots of wildlife. There's lots of it's sort of like an unseen bit of Europe in a way, isn't it?
Yes, it's got one massive tourist draw, which is Lake Ohrid. It's a huge inland lake, and it's incredibly beautiful. And if you're on the Macedonian side, you can see the mountains in Albania across it, and it's really ethereal and beautiful, and it's a big draw. Lots of people go there, and there are kind of beachy resorts along the lake, but there are also huge expanses of it that are just completely depopulated. A couple of national parks and a wild wolf population and a wild bear population. We didn't see any wolves, but we did see a bear on the first night.
I was going to say, I've heard about this. Was it on your first night? What happened?
So we set off from Skopje and we made pretty good time. We were quite surprised by the heat. I know that sounds incredibly naive, but we had seen the numbers on the weather forecast, and it just didn't translate in our heads to just how hot and how much hard work it would be. So we reached Mavrovo National Park, which is it's right on the western border of the country, and the sun was still quite high in the sky, and we thought we'd stop and have dinner, and then we'd find somewhere to camp. And so we enjoyed our first dinner in the country. We ate really well, had a few glasses of Macedonian red wine. And then we thought, oh no, we've got to quickly find somewhere to sleep, because we were traveling with bivy bags. So we're sleeping on the roadside mostly. And we were going down this mountain, and it's quite a steep descent. And we were just looking for any sort of lay-by where it might be a little bit flat, and we could put our sleeping bags down and get some kip. And we found one eventually, and it was really quite dark by then. So we thought, it's not ideal, but we'll stay here. And then just as we were kind of rolling things out and getting set up to go to sleep, the photographer who was with us, who took the pictures in Ride, Matt Grayson, he just peered over the gorge into the kind of the valley below. And he sort of went, is that a bear? And me and the other cyclists, we're like, no, come on, don't be ridiculous. And we went, and we all kind of stood on the edge of this ledge looking down into this beautiful mountain gorge, and sure enough, at the bottom there was a bear, a fully adult sized bear, just kind of rumbling along. And we thought, we're quite high up and we're quite far away, and it doesn't seem to be aware of us, but it would be such a bad start to wake up in 3 hours and find this bear right by, you know, right where we were. So we had to get back on our bikes and try and put some distance between us and he or she, this bear. And quite an eye-opening first day in
That's a really, really quick way of getting that Macedonian red wine to wear off, I guess, right? Or feel it more, I don't know. But yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, you obviously completed the trip and you've written about it in Ride. But did you kind of like make the route, did you have the route planned or did you improvise slightly? Or
We had, I would say 90% of it, we knew what we were going to do. Google Street View is, I'm sure several of your guests will have mentioned it as this incredible tool for planning bikepacking trips. We also use Komoot, which is a kind of, it's very good at telling you what sort of road surface might be there.
Yeah.
Which is obviously handy. We were riding road bikes basically. Mm-hmm. And we knew about 90% of it, and there were a few places that weren't on Google Street View. So we had no idea what they were, and we thought, this looks amazing. Based on the topography and the kind of the squiggles in the road, this could be amazing. And there were a couple of those where we reached it and we thought, this isn't going to work. You know, it's a gravel track and it's basically vertical, or just really, really busy trafficked roads and things. So we knew 90% of what we were going to do and had it on our GPS computers, and we're just following that. But yes, it still felt very much like a journey into the unknown, and there were plenty of surprises.
Well, thanks very much for kind of writing it down in Ride and documenting it as well. I think it's certainly, for me, it stands out as one of the sort of more surprising ones of the routes. And I didn't know what a spermenic was as well beforehand. So very educational too. Some of them look really, really kind of space age and stuff as well. Did you have like a particular favorite?
A favorite spermenic? There is a town in the middle of the country called Kruševo. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And it's enormous. Most of them are fairly, they're kind of a monument or a statue kind of size, if that makes sense. But this one is enormous and it has rooms within it. It's now used as a museum. So you can go and you can find out a little bit more about the history of sort of, I think it's a history of the resistance fighters based in Yugoslavia during the Second World War, but I would have to check. Mm-hmm. It was closed when we were there, but it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And it's a sort of white sphere suspended about 10 feet off of the ground. And it has this huge concrete walkway up to the door. And it's like standing at the bottom of a ramp into a UFO. That's the only thing that I can describe it as. Like architecturally, it doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before.
That's super intriguing. I think I've seen a picture of this one, and I agree. It looks amazing. I can't imagine what that would be like facing it in real life as well.
Yeah, we slept there too. We got to see it twice. It's in a kind of quite well-kept garden, sort of in the, you know, away from the center of Kruševo. So we were able to sleep there and see it in the morning as well. And it was nice to be able to kind of double up like that with a few of them.
That's great. That's awesome. If you want to read all about Tom's trip and potentially plan your own spermenic hunt, then you can in Ride. And Tom, I just wanted to kind of also ask, do you have, for anyone, any readers who might be planning their sort of first sort of bikepacking trip or cycling trip, do you have any kind of like top tips, like things that you did? You talked about sort of sleeping on roadsides and stuff. Do you have any advice with that?
Yeah, I think you have to be kind of quite respectful of the way of doing things in that particular country. I've done most of my bikepacking in Spain, and the attitude there is very much kind of, you know, let them get on with things. If you're sleeping in a hedge, make sure you don't leave any litter in the hedge, and be respectful. And then you're always going to be met with a kind of curiosity rather than hostility. And I think that goes for most places around the world that I've cycled or done bikepacking trips in. I would say you'd never regret spending more money on a sleeping bag.
Yep.
But there are, I can imagine that, situations where you regret not spending enough. I've been in that position, and it's not enjoyable. It's not worth it's not worth saving the £40 that you saved.
Do you just have like kind of buyer's regret afterwards?
Completely. Yeah, you think, why am I lying here in this ditch at 4 in the morning, unable to sleep because my knees are knocking together?
And you mentioned a bit about sort of cycling in Spain. Is that one of your favourite countries to cycle in, or do you have a kind of favourite country to cycle in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's by far and away my favourite. I think converse to kind of Macedonia, which people don't really know about. And a lot of people, when I told them I was going there, they said, where is it?
Yeah.
But Spain is kind of the opposite. It's right there under our noses. And yet there's so much unseen Spain, you know, wild green Spain, rainy North Atlantic Spain, and all these places that aren't sangria on the beach or paella. And these kind of, I love sangria on the beach, don't get me wrong. I think that Spain is undersold in terms of what you can find there, and these vast pine forests that go as far as you can see in places like that. So that is ultimately my absolute favourite place to ride bikes and to do bike packing trips.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Tom. That was brilliant and really, really inspirational too. You can catch up with Tom and all of his cycling exploits on Twitter over at TomOwenCC. And thanks once again, Tom. Thanks for joining us. And thanks for all your work on Ride as well.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So once again, a massive thank you to our guests, Rachel, Elspeth, Tom and Jenny. That was brilliant, and thank you all for joining us. Join us again next time, where we'll whisk you off to a place slightly close to home for us here in the UK. It's Cornwall. So Lucy will be back, so it won't just be me by myself. But we'll also be joined by the fantastic author, Raina Wynn, so author of The Salt Path and The Wild Silence. So she'll be talking to us all about Cornwall and the Southwest Coast Path and all of the sort of wonderful part of the world around there. So in the meantime, stay safe, and we shall be back in a fortnight. We'll see you then. Thank you very much, listener. This special episode of Where to Go was produced by the team at DKR Witness and Julia Baker, presented by James Atkinson. If you've liked what you've heard so far, please like, subscribe and rate our show on wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about DKR Witness, follow us on social media at DKR Witness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.